All right, so this morning we're going to continue talking about why should I care about a particular topic, because God cares about it, and today we're going to handle a really easy topic. Your body. Yeah, no amens with that one, eh? Why should I care about my body? Why should I care about my body? God cares about our body. Now, theology of the body has become more relevant recently just because of all the gender stuff that is going on. This you know, parses into so many different areas of life. But evangelicals, believe it or not, over the course of history, have not had a whole lot to say about the theology of the body. Actually, we have better or more comprehensive teachings on the theology of the body coming out of Catholic circles and areas like that. For instance, John Paul II has recently written a theology of the body that's getting a lot of really positive reaction and response from evangelicals. Sam Alberry, who is an evangelical, has written a book, What God Has to Say About Our Bodies, How the Gospel is Good News for Our Physical Selves. That's the name of his particular book. And it's a little bit more pedestrian than John, you know, Paul II's, but it brings the topic of the theology of our body to the forefront in evangelical circles. Now, we talk in evangelical circles all the time about stewardship, that stewardship is really important. We talk about stewardship of our time, stewardship of our money and resources, but believe it or not, God talks about the stewardship of our body. That is very, very important to God. So, we know that at creation, God, you know, made humanity from dust, that is, with physical bodies. And it's part of the creation story where God himself formed it. It wasn't breathed into existence. That God actually got his hands dirty is what we like to say. That he formed us and formed our bodies in an intentional way. It wasn't just to house our soul. There's something valuable and intrinsic to the creation of each and every one of us that God did. Let me, you know, before I officially start this morning, let me ask you a question, okay? What if you sensed in your personal life that God was really pressuring you to go to Las Vegas to talk about sexuality? How comfortable would you be? How eager would you be to go on that mission and talk about sexuality in a place like Las Vegas, okay? Well, let me introduce you to the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul had a calling to go to a place called Corinth and deal with a city that was considered Las Vegas of its time. And he had to talk to them about this whole issue of sexuality. And we'll unpack in a minute why that context is so important. So welcome to the Apostle Paul. So as the Apostle Paul, as you're reading 1 Corinthians, especially 1 Corinthians 6, at the beginning of 1 Corinthians 6, Paul is talking about all this kind of sexual immorality. And he's advocating to this church to be holy, to be pure, to not get involved with the sexual practices that are going on in the city of Corinth. And this is how he kind of ends that particular section as we dive into 1 Corinthians 6, 19 to 20. And this is what he writes. Don't you realize that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who lives in you and was given to you by God? You do not belong to yourself, for God bought you with a high price, so you must honor God with your body. Now, that's a pretty powerful statement in and of itself and by itself, okay? So, you know, Paul earlier on in this letter has talked about the church as a collective. Some of you are going to say, by the way, this particular passage talks about the church as a body. So he's not talking about individuals. But I'm going to argue with you that he is talking about both. That what happens in the corporate body of the church, that Paul is drilling this down to the individual, that in each and every one of us who have claimed faith in Jesus Christ, the Spirit of God is indwelling us. One of the things that Paul talks about in this is that you cannot, you know, do something that is, you know, morally destructive and sexually destructive and not realize that you're actually dragging the Spirit of God along into that act with you. Okay, that's the Apostle Paul's argument here. All right, so he's advocating that as a believer, do not abuse or mistreat your body in inappropriate ways that God would not favor. So this passage, even though argued about collective sense, this has individual, has singular pronouns in it, and singular verbal forms to reinforce that Paul is talking to the individual as well, okay? Now, Corinth at that time was the third largest city in the Roman Empire. It was even, at the time, larger than Athens. It's estimated that some 200,000 people lived in that city, and it was known for its hedonism, its debauchery, its sexual immorality. It was famous for that. In fact, if you lived at that time and somebody called you a Corinthian, they called you a derogatory term because they saw you as some kind of a deviant, some kind of a person who enjoyed debauchery of one kind or another. And what's interesting, if you read the book of Acts or 1 Corinthians, Paul, it talks about Paul going into Athens. And when Paul went into Athens, for instance, he was really grieved because there was just so much idolatry in Athens. If you, you know, read the book of Acts, you know that Paul comes across the tomb of the unknown God, and he starts speaking to the philosophers about the tomb of the unknown God. But what's interesting, I think it's in 1 Corinthians 2, 1 to 5, he talks about being fearful going into Corinth. Now imagine that for just a second. Here's the Apostle Paul, who, you know, almost single-handedly planted all these churches in the known world at that time. And, you know, this brave, you know, proclaimer of the gospel. And here he is, fearful, going into Corinth because of the reputation that that city had. In fact, there's one point in the book of Corinthians where Paul gets a vision from God that says, don't be fearful. Speak with boldness because I am with you. So don't be afraid. Because even in a situation, in a context like that, Paul himself was even, you know, potentially fearful of how his message would come across in a place that was known for its debauchery. Okay? And I think he ministered there for about a year and a half. Now, if you go to Corinth today, about 18, you'll see an Acropolis. Most major cities at that time had an Acropolis where they would have a raised part over the city, these temples. And the Temple of Aphrodite is really well known. In fact, if you go to Corinth today, you're going to see the ruins of the Temple of Aphrodite. There's even a museum close by that, you know, brings in all the historical stuff from this particular time period. And Strabo writes that at the time that there were at least 1,000 male and female prostitutes that were connected to the Temple of Aphrodite. In fact, if you know anything about the fertility cults and the mystery cults of the Greek and Romans, sexuality was part of the rite and the ritual to be entered into the faith, that you would have to have sex with one of the prostitutes, etc. That was like a rite of initiation and a rite through certain festivals of fertility and stuff like that. So it was an interesting time religiously, okay? And we know that Paul is speaking to many people who have come out of this culture and are now in the church and say, don't participate in these kinds of stuff. It's not what God intended. It's not, you're doing something, and part of the argument is you're doing something to your body that God never intended. Don't miss this, okay? Because many of you are going to drive this to moral ethics, religious kind of boundaries that God has put on us. But the fact of the matter is that God intended something with our bodies that is being abused in this particular context. This is the main appeal that Paul is bringing forward to this. Okay? So, and you have the Holy Spirit living inside of you, and this is really, really important. And when this particular passage says, honor God with your body, the word honor is the same Greek word we used for glorify. To glorify God in your body. Okay? Now that's the context of sexuality, okay, in this particular. But let me read you another passage that Paul writes about that many of you know this almost probably by heart. It's out of Romans 12, 1 to 2. And so, dear brothers and sisters, Paul writes, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all that he has done for you. Let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship him. Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world. Now, notice the contrast, right? This is what is done with their bodies, but I'm pleading with you to give your body honorably to God, okay? And let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. Now, this well-known passage, you know, we sometimes get not exactly sure how to relate this, but because Paul's talking about changing the way we think, we often think of this passage as very academic or very starting in the head. But earlier on in the passage, Paul is talking about our bodies. You know, give our bodies over to God, okay? So he finds it acceptable. And the fact of the matter, Paul is talking about all kinds of things here to change. For instance, what about the way we eat, the way we sleep, the way we rest, you know, all exercise, all kinds of, Paul's talking about all kinds of things like this. And he's talking about the way we change our thinking, right, is going to impact those areas. Let me give you an example, okay? Let's talk about food. No? Yeah. Danger is talking about food when it's just before lunchtime. Okay? So, granted. But let's talk about food. If food for you is just feeding a craving or a comfort, okay, we all know that could potentially lead to you eating stuff that's not necessarily good for you, right? Now, if you change your way of thinking to say, everything I eat is medicine for my body, imagine how much that changes your thinking. Okay? Yes, I like chips too. All right, can we just, I like chips too, no matter what. Okay? And every time I eat chips, what's going on in my mind? This is bad medicine. I need to be more disciplined. Thank you very much. So don't think you're alone. All right? I'm in this game with you. But wouldn't that change your thinking dramatically if you thought that way? That everything I eat is medicine for my body. Okay? That's what Paul's talking about. And we can talk about sleep. We can talk about just the changing of your thinking is going to affect the way you respond to your body. All right? Let me keep going. David, in Psalm 139, 13 to 14, says, you made all the delicate inner parts of my body and knit me together in my mother's womb. Thank you for making me so wonderfully complex. Your workmanship is marvelous. How well I know it. How many of you have ever asked somebody, what's your relationship with so-and-so like? And they go, it's complicated. What if I told you it's supposed to be complicated? Because we're made in the complex, wonderfully complex. There's David putting a whole different spin on it. So, how do we honor God with our bodies? Let me give you some really quick things to absorb this morning before we get into communion. And by the way, this is really appropriate for communion because we're talking about the body and blood of Jesus Christ, right? So this is a great transfer kind of message. Okay, honoring our bodies. First of all, the Bible talks about discipleship in bodily terms. Talks about discipleship in bodily terms. It's we can't separate ourselves from our bodies. You know, I'm going to talk in a minute about there's a present philosophy that is part of our culture today that says, I am not my body. That my personhood and my humanhood are two totally different things. And I can separate my body from who I am as a person. By the way, that's an argument in abortion, okay? Until they become person, they don't deserve life, okay? So that's where this argumentation is happening in our world around us, okay? So discipleship is very much bodily. If you study the Bible, it's going to talk about the care that we take of the bodies that God has entrusted to us. Often it talks in terms of sexual morality, but it often talks in terms of sleep, rest, Sabbath. By the way, Sabbath is a blessing to your body, if you don't realize that. That's just not an academic, spiritual exercise. It is meant for you to rest, okay? There's a very much intention to all of that. Paul in Romans 3 talks about sin hijacking every member of our body. Okay, in too many areas of our discipleship, we've separated our Christianity from our bodies. There are aspects of our physical life that we think are irrelevant to our faith. And there are parts of our Christian life that we think have nothing to do with our bodies. But the truth is, the New Testament talks about discipleship in bodily terms. Here's number two. If we mistreat our bodies, we mistreat our soul. Now, I can easily get into gender dysphoria and all those kinds of things. That's not the point of this particular, because that's a whole nother argumentation. But no matter what, if we abuse our bodies, we abuse our souls. We hurt what God has given us. Okay? Culturally, we struggle with two extremes. We are either obsessed with our body, or we reject it outright. And we don't have this nice balance that the bodies that God has given us is meant for our care. If we can't steward what God has entrusted us in a physical way, it's going to be hard for us to steward everything else that God has given us. We can't abuse it. And yet it seems in culture that we can abuse our bodies because it's just something that either we're unhappy with, happy with, use it for our own, physical desires, whatever. But there's an intrinsic relationship between our physical selves and our souls. Number three, physical resurrection as a believer's true, and I put the word eschatological hope, okay? Eschatology being the study of final things, the last things, et cetera, et cetera. As Christians, we all die. No doubt about it. But the hope of the resurrection that's begun already in our hearts means that death is not the end of the body. That's the other thing. We're not spiritual kind of floating around on clouds and all that kind of stuff. There is a physical resurrection for each and every one of us. Jesus' bodily resurrection is a foretaste of what each and every one of us are going to enjoy in the after. That there's a physical resurrection. And please don't ask me if, you know, your gut's going to be gone, or if your, you know, your weight's going to be different, or your eyes are going to be okay without glasses or anything like that. I have no idea. You know, I'm so glad God's taking care of that and I don't have to, you know, because I know whatever God's going to decide is going to be fine with me. Can I just say that? Okay? You will be perfect. Hey, right? You know, I think that's why there's never a mention of mirrors in heaven. You ever notice that? No mirrors in heaven, okay? So, yeah, if you can prove me wrong, but there's no mirrors in heaven, okay? Here's the last thing I want to say, okay? The fall affected the potential for our health span to match our lifespan, okay? Now, I'm... don't have the time to unpack this one as much as I'd like to, but we all have a lifespan from, you know, time we first take breath to the time we take our last breath. But we all know that our health span does not match our lifespan. For many of us, you know, something physically happens that limits our ability to enjoy the entirety of life. You know, I'm talking about physical, emotional, and spiritual. I know some of us struggle emotionally with life, and we don't get to enjoy life to the fullness as God intended because of the emotional trauma that we live with. Same with the spiritual, okay? We've been abused spiritually to such a way that we cannot have a communion with God that's healthy and vibrant because our health span has been reduced far shorter than what our lifespan is. We know many people who, you know, from a physical sense, right, live to be, you know, 80, but, you know, come down with something at 70, and those last 10 years are a difficult area of life. What I'm trying to say is that God intended for our health span to match our lifespan as close as possible. And one of the things that God has entrusted to us is our bodies, to take care of them as much as possible. I say to our, you know, I've said to our students many, many times over the years, because when I've taught this to, you know, like 20-year-olds, and I've had to say to them, what you eat today is going to be what the doctor has to deal with you about 10 years down the road. Okay, we all know that, all right? So let me give you one last Bible passage just to encourage you, right? Ephesians 2, 9 to 10, and you know this one well as well. Salvation is not a reward for the good things we have done, so none of us can boast about it. For we are God's masterpiece. The word masterpiece is where we get the word poem from, so we are God's poetry. You've heard me say this before, okay? So whatever you think of yourself in terms of body, image, emotion, or whatever, you are still God's masterpiece in the fallen state that you are. But God encourages us to take care of what he has entrusted to us so that we can have a better health span over our lifespan. Okay?